Hi, everybody. My name is Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York, and really good to be here with you guys tonight. Welcome to the newcomers. Welcome to the people who are introducing themselves. Welcome to the people. Welcome to everybody, right? We're all happy to be together. So tonight I'm going to talk about growing our faith and strengthening our spirituality. And so faith, I'm going to first kind of define what is faith. It's complete trust or confidence in someone or something. And some words that are similar to faith is trust, belief, confidence, conviction, reliance, dependence, optimism, hopefulness, hope, and expectation. Those are all words that are similar to faith. Those are characteristics of faith. And the opposite of faith is mistrust, like no trust. So faith, if I think about faith, what is it? It's this internal belief, and it's actually more than a belief. It's a knowledge. It's this inner knowledge that our needs will be met. And that even if these needs are not met, that we will be ultimately taken care of, right? So even if my what I believe to be my needs are not going to be satisfied, it's this internal knowing that I will be okay. That's faith. And it can be described as this certainty that we're not alone, this feeling that we're just not alone. And in order to recover, what is essential is that first we have to lose faith in ourselves, right? Because that's self-reliance. When I have all the faith and belief in myself, that's self-reliance. And really step one is all about the smashing of faith in myself, the belief that I can do this job on my own. And after that, we begin, to work on step two, which is to have faith in the only thing that can actually give us relief, right? There's only one thing. So in More About Alcoholism on page 30, it says we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. So before I can start acquiring faith from other sources, I have to have destruction and faith of myself. And that's what that smashing is. It's, I cannot manage and control my eating and my weight, and I cannot manage to apply knowledge and desire, right? I can't use my knowledge and I can't use my desire. And the loss of that faith in myself, that's a good thing. And it needs to be 100% smashed and eradicated. And that's really step one, that smashing of faith in myself. So for tonight, though, we're going to focus on the necessity for strengthening our faith, not in ourselves, but in a higher power. Okay. So in the AA 12 and 12, on step 12, page 109 says, from great numbers of such experiences, we could predict that the doubter who still claimed that he hadn't got the spiritual angle, and who still considered his well-loved AA group the higher power, would presently love God and call him by name. Just love that. Because what that tells me is that step 12 says, yeah, at some point, we no longer just hang on to the group as the higher power, that it's God. We just love God and we call him by name. And I heard this great podcast one time, and the speaker said something about the word God that made me stop and take note. And he said that in the beginning of recovery, many newcomers struggle with the word. They don't like it. They won't say it. They won't use it. And I actually was one of those people. You know, I thought it was beneath my consideration, that that was too provincial a word for someone so worldly and smart and free-spirited as me, right? And that was arrogance. That's real arrogance. Because there I was, you know, 300 pounds, killing myself with food. But to use that three-letter word was somehow not, you know, not so smart for a woman like me. And that my experience having that attitude was not unique, right? In fact, a lot of people will say all sorts of things like their doorknob is their higher power, or the group is their higher power, or like even a chair, right? People name all sorts of inanimate objects, which make no sense, right? That things that could not have more power can't really have higher power, right? Than a person, an inanimate object. But people go through that process. But he says, and I thought this was great, that nobody with 10 years sobriety is calling the doorknob their higher power. Like anybody who has long-term strong recovery at some point just uses the word and comes to understand that their own internal concept, conception of God might be different from everybody sitting next to them, but they presently love God and call him by name. And so we can sit in a meeting together and have a whole variety of religious affiliations and different beliefs and practices and, you know, and spiritual demonstrations, but we generally just call it God. And we kind of move on with it. And so what I really want to say is that if I use the word God or any name that you might find offensive or exclusionary, please understand that is not my intention. I want nothing more than everybody here to feel that connection, right? That idea that that we presently love God and call him by name. So I'm gonna try to speak in a way that's as inclusive as possible. First of all, because that is aligned with my own set of ideals, right? To be inclusive. But it's also in the directions of the text that I love so much. It says all inclusive, never exclusive to those who earnestly seek. So that's the directions right there. We're not supposed to exclude somebody, the basis of them calling God, you know, having a different conception of God. So, okay, so now this is going to bring me to step two. And we find that in order for one to recover, it's going to be necessary that we come to a place where we have faith that some kind of power exists and that this power can restore us to sanity. And so how can we increase this faith? You know, in the appendix, the spiritual experience, we're told, it's on page 568, that most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. And it says, but these are indispensable, so we can't do without them. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance, and that principle is contempt prior to investigation. Okay, so there's a lot of information in those two paragraphs. But it tells me to increase faith, I'm going to need one, willingness, two, honesty, three, open-mindedness, four, I'm going to have to take some action, and here's the action, investigating without contempt. So if you're investigating without contempt, then you're checking things out and like really looking, like think about an investigator. An investigator asks a lot of questions, doesn't just like pick up the book and say, oh yeah, no, it's not here, right? They dig, they ask, they inquire, they move things, they examine. And they do it, without contempt, meaning they do it with admiration and awe. To me, this means that I'm seeking, actively seeking, and I'm doing it with delight, like I'm doing it with that positive, upbeat attitude, and with the intention of finding. I'm not looking so that I don't find it, right? I'm looking so I really find it. And I'm expecting to not only find, but to like the act of seeking and to delight in whatever I find. That's the opposite, right? If you're like investigating, if you have contempt, you're not doing that, right? And we don't want to have contempt prior to investigating. We want to look hard and we want to look positively. And I think about it like there was these books that I used to read with my kids when they were little. They were the Where's Waldo books. And right, and you had to find Waldo. And Waldo was like this guy in a red striped shirt with blue pants. And there were loads of things in the pictures that looked like it had like red and white on top and blue on the bottom, but you had to keep looking harder till you found Waldo. And that's sort of right. I'm supposed to really look. And when we did it, when my kids did it, they liked doing it. And there were all sorts of other little things. There'd be a checklist of other things to find on the page, like, find three apples and find a dog that's got a bone, and like it was fun, right? They enjoyed it. And that's supposed to be my same experience that I should have when I'm seeking to find a connection with God. In the paragraph it says that defeat happens when we have an attitude of intolerance and belligerent denial. So if we want victory over food, right, which for us means that we're gonna have a lot of faith, right? If I want faith and I want to deepen my spirituality, then I need the opposite of intolerance and belligerent denial. And the opposite is tolerance. And number six, easygoing acceptance and agreement, right? So I'm going to spend some time really delving into the six ideas that I listed there. First one being willingness, okay? Willingness. Doing things that are suggested, even if you don't want to, even if it's hard, even if it doesn't sound logical. Willingness is essential. And how do we cultivate willingness? Like people will say, I don't have the willingness, or I'm praying for the willingness. Well, how do you get willing? How do you get there? And I would say willingness is born of desperation. And it's probably, 10 parts desperation. Because people don't come in here feeling on top of the world, right? I mean, we are tonight feeling on top of the world, but generally when people come in striving, hoping and praying and needing some willingness, they're desperate, they're in pain. And I can't create that for someone else. I can't make another human being desperate, right? That's the job of the disease. That's the job of the food. What I can do though is when someone comes to us early on in and they're really upset and they feel defeated by the disease, the instructions in working with others doesn't say cheer them up. It doesn't say pat them on the back and say it's going to get better. We don't. We actually are supposed to heap on evidence of just how awful this disease is, because we're supposed to create, help create the incentive for finding God, right? And so we're supposed to, when someone comes in and they're defeated by the disease and they're like, I can't believe it, I picked up again, and here I am again, I picked up again. I'm not supposed to say to them, it's okay, good. You know, I'm glad you're here. Today's gonna be different, right? I'm supposed to say to them, I know. And the sad truth is that with all the tears you're crying right now, if you have what I have, you're gonna do it again. You're gonna do it again. Because desperation is an important component for willingness. But desperation alone isn't enough, right? That's not enough. Because what we need is, we need like 100 parts desperation. And then I need a little bit of hope. I need a sprinkling of hope. And I would say, like, how do you get hope, right? Where's the hope? And that's the purpose of a meeting. That's the purpose of us sharing, that we're supposed to carry a message of hope, right? That a good meeting and a good qualification, yes, the person will speak about their experience so that you can relate and you know, and understand that this person has what you have, but they're also supposed to speak of the change that occurred, because that's what gives people hope. That's what makes people think. I mean, otherwise, if you're just desperate, you may as well, like, what are you gonna do? Just be desperate. But the reason we come here, and I would say that anybody who shows up at a meeting, they've got hope. Otherwise, what are you doing here, right? I mean, anybody that ever called me, that picked up the phone, that dialed my number and said, I don't know if I have any hope. Well, you had some, because your fingers touched the phone and you called. So there must have been some glimmer. There must have been some little spark that got you. And so, you know, we're supposed to build on that hope as well. And I would say, you know, what do I do to keep myself feeling hopeful? You know, if I waver in any area, you know, I think back to when I first came to meetings and I saw other people who were well, who were living the lives that looked like they were healthy and well. Those people gave me hope. Today, watching others recover, seeing people come in and get it and change, that consistently gives me hope in all areas of my life. You know, I share, you know, oftentimes I'll share my pictures, right? I'll share my story because it's supposed to elicit some hope for people. And it says in the doctor's opinion on XXXI, when I need a mental uplift. You know, even the doctor talked about it, times when he felt sad or felt down or burdened by all the work, he would think of someone who was a hopeless, desperate case who got well, right? So stories of transformation, the miracles, those are the things that give me hope. You know, I love reading stories of hope. I love reading positive things. You know, for me as a teacher, when I have a student that makes huge academic gains against all odds, that gives me hope. You know, we had a house here that was like an eyesore. It was like one of those, I think they called it like a zombie house because it was sort of abandoned. And then people moved in, and the house just, they planted things, they made it so beautiful. And that gave me hope, right? That somebody can come in and make change. You know, I had a rotting onion. I shared this before. There was a rotting onion on our counter, and my daughter decided to put it in some water because it was like getting some of those little roots on it, this smelly onion, and it started like shooting up offshoots. And then we stuck it in soil and planted it in the ground. And that rotting onion turned into like a gorgeous, exotic looking, tall, skinny, beautiful flower. Right? Those kinds of things. I mean, I think like If ever I think that something, is hopeless and ugly, think about a stinking onion that can turn into something so beautiful. I search out oftentimes with the intention of finding miracles. Okay, so then honesty. How does honesty build up my faith? If I'm honest, well, then I'm saying I trust. And being honest, we place ourselves in a very vulnerable position. It is the act of the faithful. Even saying right at the beginning, I don't believe, would you believe that that is a demonstration of faith? Because that's a demonstration of trust. And it's funny because it seems to be like people think it's like such a secret when they whisper it. I'm not sure. It's like, well, no joke. Of course you don't. Right? Of course you don't. Or not fully, right? And I would say, I was told at one point to act as if. Well, act as if you believe. And I understand what that direction meant, but I'm gonna say, I generally don't say that to people because that's dishonest. And who are you acting for, right? Are you acting for your sponsor? Are you acting for other fellows? Are you acting to try to fool God? Right? I mean, so we don't have to act, but we can certainly take actions. We can take willingness actions. We can seek. And I love, Janet's prayer for someone who doesn't believe. And it goes like this: God, I don't know if you're there. And if you are there, I don't know if you care. But if you are there and you do care, I need help, right? And she says, like, what's the worst that can happen? It falls and it's dead air, right? But what if, right? What if? And I loved her so much that, like, all things that we do in program when we love something, we plagiarize it, right? Plagiarize it. Tweak a word and then say it's my own. And I say, I loved it. I say this, like, God, I don't know that I believe in you. And I don't even know that you're interested in helping me. I don't know that I'm worthwhile enough to be helped. But I know that there's others who believe in you. They assure me that you're real and that you've worked miracles in their lives. And I need one of those miracles too. Because it really starts by asking. That's the action of the faithful. So I'd say, like, pray those prayers for a while and just wait and see the change. I've seen the changes happen in people. Miracles begin to happen. I love when Janet says that prayer is the currency in the spiritual world. That makes perfect sense to me. It's the catalyst to make things happen. And so for me, honesty in all areas of my life opens me up and it builds a reserve of faith. When I am honest with everybody, meaning my boss, my colleagues, my husband, my kids, I am saying to God, I trust you with the outcome. And when I'm dishonest, I'm telling God, move over, get out of the way. I know what's best, and I'm going to make my plan come to fruition. Right? And so, if you want to have faith, start being honest. Right? Just start being honest. Open-mindedness. Let's talk about open-mindedness. Quality of being willing to consider ideas and opinions that are new or different from your own. And if you're open-minded, it means admitting that you're not all-knowing. It means believing that whatever truth you find might always have more to it than you realize. And so, how do we become more open-minded? Well, we started tonight out with the set-aside prayer. That's a great way to kind of clear out the clutter of what you think you know and make room for something new. And I would say, if prayer doesn't get you to open your mind, right? Because prayer is what we use to open up our minds. You know, we're told, okay, if your mind's not open, well, then the food may convince you, right? And in We Agnostics on page 48, it says, faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was the great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. So I would, for me, for years, my mind was wide open to schemes and crazy ideas. And especially where weight loss was concerned. The crazier the idea, the more extreme and expensive, the less it made sense, the more I was open to trying it. No logic there. You know, my mind was always ready to abandon logic and rational thought in search of a miracle cure. And I didn't even require evidence. How's that? In fact, I have yet to meet a person who has been successful on the cabbage soup diet. And yet I would go to the store and buy all the ingredients. It was like one of my favorite go-tos. And I've never met a person who successfully lost and maintained any weight loss on that scheme. So I wasn't open-minded, right? I was sort of insanely blind. And what convinced me, you know, to like try this idea, God, right? What convinced me to try God? Food. The food convinced me. I was open-minded when I ran out of options. And for me, I attempted at the beginning to use my intelligence and it failed. It didn't bring me the power I needed. I opened my mind a little bit more to consider the spiritual side. And I found that act of humility, that the act of saying, I'm not smart enough to do this. I don't know more. I can't know more. That act of humility allowed the power to rush in. God met me where I was at. And that's been my experience. You know, I shared the story that I had this thought in when I was grappling in step two. I thought, you know, when it said, why don't you choose your own conception? I thought that was a dumb idea. Right, here I was, I didn't like the one you presented with me, but I thought this idea of choosing your own conception was stupid because I used my logic to fight that. I said, well, you just told me that that my thinking is what's broken. And now you want me to use my broken thinking to conjure up my own conception of a God. What is it, right? And I thought I was so smart that I smarted my way out of this. And what happened for me was I got like a miracle, like knock on my, you know, on my back, on my head. I had this thought that came rushing through my brain and it sounded like my dad's voice, who was gone. And what I heard was, and it sounded just like my father would have said, don't be so smart. You want to get well or not? And that's what I heard. And my answer was, yeah, I want to get well. I want to get well, you know, so how do you keep an open mind? Question yourself about spiritual beliefs, investigate new ideas, reach out to different people in the fellowship, ask others how they came to believe, try a different prayer practice, change where you meditate, try a different meditation, stop making assumptions and judgments, stop saying things like, I would never, I just don't relate to, that's not my thing. Those kinds of statements are the statements of the closed-minded. You know, the next concept that I want to explore is seeking with delight and with the intention of finding. In step two, in the AA 12 and 12, page 33 says, true humility and an open mind can lead us to faith. And every AA meeting is an assurance that God will restore us to sanity if we rightly relate ourselves to him. So I have to relate myself to God in the right way. Attending meetings, so it talks here about meetings. Attending meetings with an investigative spirit, listen to a meeting, I would say with a pad next to you, Right? Sorry, my phone is going off. And write down any new ideas. You know, when someone calls me and says that, yeah, sometimes I listen to that meeting, but I don't do it all the time, or I'm really busy, or I don't know that I have time. Remember, willingness is indispensable. So I try to find where are they not willing, and how can I kind of push them and encourage them to access more willingness. So when usually when someone says, I don't want to listen to that meeting, I might say, great, listen to that meeting every day and write down, take notes, right? Listen with the action of finding gems and jewels. And especially, here's a good practice. We all go to meetings and some people's voices annoy us. Maybe mine is one of your voices that annoys you. Instead of lowering the volume, hopefully it's not, you're here, right? Instead of lowering the volume when someone comes on that you don't especially like, why don't you listen for the gem? Keep your mind open. And what I tell myself when I get like beneath, right? It gets beneath my consideration. I remind myself, really? You can't listen for 3 minutes? 3 minutes, that's it, right? Certainly, I can demonstrate 3 minutes worth of willingness. I ask questions with true curiosity and not trying to show that you're smart or trying to prove your point. Sometimes we get asked questions and we can sort of tell that the person has an answer and they want either validation for their answer, or they want to back you in a corner so that they can discredit everything else that you may have shared with them. Don't ask a question like that, right? Ask a question. If you're going to bother asking a question, open mind, really looking to hear the answer. Doesn't mean you have to take it, right? But certainly enough to consider. Questioning is a deliberate action of someone who's seeking, and it leads us to deepen our faith. You might not get the right answer from that person, but it might lead you down a path to find the real Waldo, right? In We Agnostics on page 46, it says, God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek, so honestly seeking. When I pray and meditate, I do this with an optimistic spirit. I expect to feel God, and I find that I see and feel what I look for. You know, here's like a little hint I tell people. If you go outside and you start looking on the ground for bugs, you find bugs. It's amazing. In like a little amount of dirt, just like this, think about an investigative spirit, right? You find what you look for. And, I go outside and look for birds. I'm going to see birds. You know, pay attention to the butterflies. Look for the beauty in life. You want to find God? Start looking for demonstrations of God. Start looking for the miraculous, things that you could not dream up, that you could not create. For me, like I try to embrace the second grader in me, to look with that optimistic, childlike, less than, not jaded kind of attitude, with a childlike enthusiasm when I see the miraculous hand in God. So, Haley, would you help me out? I'm going to ask you to read something. And if anybody has this, it's sort of like a little demonstration that I like to do. If you have the AA 12 and 12, and you can turn in step two, it's page 27, the bottom paragraph. And you're going to start with, this is only one man's. Go ahead, Haley.
Hey, I'm Haley R. from Georgia, compulsive overeater. This is only one man's opinion based on his own experience, of course. I must quickly assure you that AAs tread innumerable paths in their quest for faith. If you don't care for the one I've suggested, you'll be sure to discover one that suits if only you look and listen.
Great. Let's
Many,
stop right there.
okay,
That's
sure.
perfect. Thank you.
You're
I
welcome.
love that paragraph, right? That paragraph gives me some good information. But now I want you to do something totally separate and aside. If you had the book, now put the book down. And here's what I'm going to ask you. In that paragraph, how many letter A's were there in that section? You know, the letter A, how many letter A's were there? And you'd be thinking like, what? I didn't know that I was supposed to be looking for A's. Exactly. Do you believe that there were letter A's there? There had to be some letter A's there. But you didn't notice how many letter A's there because you weren't looking for the letter A, right? And let we can apply the same principle, that same idea with God. When we walk around saying, well, I don't see God and I don't feel God. If you're actively seeking and you actively look, God will show up. Just like if I asked you now to go back in the paragraph, no doubt you guys could come back to me with an accurate number of the letter A's there. And certainly you could try the same principle, the same kind of activity in looking for God. In the AA 12 and 12, step 12, page 108 to 109, it says in step 11, we saw that if a higher power had restored us to sanity and had enabled us to live with some peace of mind in a sorely troubled world, then such a higher power was worth knowing better. By as direct contact as possible, the persistent use of meditation and prayer we found did open the channel, so that where there had been a trickle, there now was a river, which led to sure power and safe guidance from God as we were increasingly better able to understand him. So I found that in order to grow my faith, my trust in God, then I need to spend more time with God. That's what it says. Time spent in prayer and meditation is time I give to forming this trusting relationship. And in practical terms, I pray by speaking directly to God. You know, I have specific prayers for my children, for my husband, for my coworkers, for bosses, other people who may be on my resentment list. You know, in the height of COVID, I had a prayer for COVID. I have a prayer for, you know, social wrongs, all situations that fill me with fear or frustration are situations where I must go to my loving creator. And for me, my practice that I did was I record myself saying my prayers. And then as part of my practice, I play these prayers. And I try to speak to God as if he were my bestie, as if he is like my best friend and my most trusted companion. I speak to him in my natural language, the one who absolutely has my back and wants the best for us all. And when a prayer for me, when a prayer becomes too stale and I find that I'm saying it in rote without any thought, then I might change it up or rewrite it entirely. And you know, remember that I said in order to grow my faith, I was going to act to like the act of seeking. So when I'm asked by fellows, how can they make sure that they take the time to pray and meditate? I suggest that you fall in love with your prayer and meditation practice. You know, if you see it as a chore, an item to just merely check off the list, you know, it makes me think about friendships that became obligations that you don't really enjoy spending time together. And those friendships withered and died. That's what happens. You get too busy for them. They feel like an obligation. You don't feel much from them. So you stop spending time together. And that is not the way that I want to have a relationship with God. I want to enjoy my time with God, right? Okay, now having an attitude of tolerance and easygoing acceptance. And remember, it says that intolerance and belligerent denial can keep us from building a reserve of faith. So if I want to increase my faith, then I will need to trust God with the management of others. I have to strengthen myself by not paying such close attention to every little feeling of discomfort. I can learn to tolerate others' ideas and perspectives and accept that different people do things differently. And this is where I always say you got to get a little thicker skin, right? I have to increase my threshold for discomfort. I can accept that I'm not going to get my way most of the time, even if my way is the right way. The less attached I am to outcomes, the more I trust God, the more my faith grows. And I found that, you know, it works in serious crises. You know, the most difficult crisis that I had, I felt God's presence right next to me. You know, and my prayer to God when life has been difficult for me is an honest prayer, which is for me, I don't like this. That's how I start off this prayer. I have started off the prayer, you know, sobbing. I started off a prayer sobbing. God, I don't like this at all. I am really sad. And I am really unhappy. And I am really scared. But I trust you. And, you know, even saying that when I said it, and I say it today when things are tough, I feel this sense of comfort flood over me. I just do. You know, and what I realized at the moment was I was incredibly grateful that I had a food addiction. How's that? When life has been really hard for me, I'm so grateful that I had a food addiction, because my food addiction forced me to have a relationship with God, which became essential when life gave me the real problems. I thought food was my biggest problem, but then God presented me with some real problems. Life just got lifey. Life began, you know, and what happened for me was that I had a well-established prayer practice and a relationship with God that I could call upon when those other problems came my way. And I realized that, you know what, if my food problem actually was a gift, then maybe whatever problem I'm in the midst of involved with might actually someday be a gift as well. And now I never say that to somebody who's crying to me about a real problem, because that would be cold, but I can say that for myself. In hindsight, some of my greatest obstacles, right? And I heard a friend say recently that pain gives me the skill set. It developed my spiritual skill set. You know, I'm going to stop there because I didn't even talk about spirituality, but I don't want to rush it, because tonight all I really spoke about was faith. And there's a whole other aspect about strengthening our spirituality. So I'm going to stop at this point and continue it the next time. And with that, I'll pass.
Next year.
Next year.